This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto News. Exclusive interviews. Real world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, the announcer says it. This show is brought to you in part by Dodge, and I'm very happy about that. I mean, you know, of course there's the financial part of it, but the reality is that I am so careful who I let be involved with this show. I mean, that's the honest to God truth. As much of a knucklehead as I am, I have to really think about what it's like to listen to a radio show about a bunch of people blathering on about cars, and then you hear some snake oil or some crap that is just pure BS. I don't allow that. So when it comes to the auto manufacturers or the aftermarket, I look at, you know, the companies, and when they knock on the door, I'm like, yeah, you can come in. And Dodge, of course, you know, I drive a Viper ACR, which to me was the most bodacious thing I could get my hands on that I could barely afford. And so I did that. Now we've got something even more bodacious called the Demon. And of course, now I did not get invited, which is very odd, and I'm going to send this to the president of Dodge to even test drive this car, probably because he feels like, well, Alan would wreck it. So Carl Brower is on the line, executive publisher of Auto Trader, dealer.com, and Kelley Blue Book, the people where you find out what your vehicle's worth. And Kelley Blue Book is KBB.com. And CarlBrower.com, also he has his own little side hustle going on because he's such a car guy. He's like, it's like it's not enough to do it all day long. You go home and do it some more at night, you crazy swine.
Pretty much.
So you did get invited, you evil, evil demon meister, you, to drive the Demon. So,
yeah, and, you know, I told Tim, he said, should I invite Alan? I said, no, he'll wreck it. So that's why he didn't invite you.
Exactly. Because you know I would have, man. I would have. I said to Carl, and notice there's like a little note here. It says, Carl just drove Durango SRT and new wide-body Hellcat. And I go, didn't you drive the Demon? He says, yeah, I drove that on top of those. I went, you mean you actually went on top of them? And he goes, well, it does pop a wheelie, you know. And there's a little funny story I'll have to tell you. I used to have, when I was just out of high school, I bought a Toyota Land Cruiser, FJ40 Land Cruiser. I think it was about a 70 model. And somebody had transplanted a V8 with a Muncie 4-speed, a Chevy V8 with a Muncie 4-speed. And this thing would pop wheelies. And somebody said to me one time, you know, I was at the Jolly Cone in Ojai, California, where I grew up. And my buddy says to me, pop a wheelie when you pull away. Because, I mean, this thing would really had big wheels and tires. And, you know, I went to pull out, and I was going to kind of chirp burning out backwards to get everybody to look because I was an egomaniac, of course, you know, 18 years old.
Hard to believe, but okay.
Yeah, right. And so instead of putting it in reverse, which the linkage, since this was not the right motor and transmission for this Toyota Land Cruiser, the linkage was goofy, and I'm trying to, like, get it over and put it in reverse, and I thought I had it in reverse.
Oh, no.
And no, I had it in first. So I chirped, and I chirped straight up in the air and landed right on a picnic table that I had been sitting at with some other people. Now, I got up to leave. The other people were still sitting there. When I got up to leave, fortunately, they got up to go and get another Jolly Cone ice cream, right? So the table was empty. Crushed that table to oblivion. So, Carl, you could drive the Dodge Demon on top of the Durango SRT in the wide body had it popped a wheelie high enough. But
yeah,
it only pops a wheelie about 3 inches high. So, yeah, I don't think you're going to get there unless you have a matchbox under you. Anyway.
No, it's like 3 feet, although I wasn't sure if it was 3 feet vertical, and now I've realized it's 3 feet, I think, horizontal, meaning that front wheels are off the ground for three feet.
Yeah. So
yeah,
when I was on TV, by the way, I'm showing this on ABC in front of 6 million people. I said, it pops a wheelie 3 feet in the air. And so they actually edited that out because it wasn't 3 feet up. It was 3 feet forward, three inches. Anyway, it was the day that the thing had just been shown to the world. So we're going to start out with the Dodge Demon, knowing I have to take a commercial break. Give me the 1 minute on your drive in the Demon, and then we'll pick it up on the other side of the break.
Well, this is a production car that will lift the front wheels off the ground and will do a quarter mile in under 10 seconds. And it's sold to crazy people like you and I. You don't actually need like a competition license to buy it, and it's got a license plate on the back. This shows what Dodge is willing to do. I mean, the title of my Forbes article was, "In today's automotive homogenized world, one brand still does crazy." You know, I mean, that is why I think Dodge is fabulous. I think that's why you're happy to have them involved in the show.
That's right.
It's a company that's got as much or more automotive passion and flair than anyone else out there on the planet right now.
Well, excellent. All right, let me take a break. We'll come back and talk about some other crazy vehicles, the Durango SRT and the new wide-body Hellcat right alongside that wild and crazy Dodge Demon. I'm thinking about getting one. I'm working my angle with the wife. We're going to take a break. It is The Drive. We'll be right back with more Carl Brown.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet. The new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance. Listening to The Drive, I'm Alan Taylor. Thanks for hanging with us. We're talking cars and the car industry and the car hobby with all my car buddies. Guys like Carl Brower, who started his career as an automotive journalist with Hot Rod Magazine, and today he is the big cheese, the executive publisher over there at Kelley Blue Book, Auto Trader, Dealer.com, and he has his own little side hustle, CarlBrower.com. And he is the owner of a Ford GT, and he has also been given the right to buy the new Ford GT. So I don't know how he's going to do that. He'll be probably on a life support machine for a little while when he sells his organs to buy that new GT. But, you know, isn't it great that we live in a time when we know that this kind of stuff is nearing the end of its life, this kind of, you know, Dodge Demons and Ford GTs, because the electric cars and the autonomous cars and the, you know, I was talking to a friend the other day. He's going to be on the show here later on in the show about the fact that data is so important that someday that the big, and I think he said it like this, like Google and these companies that are so hungry for your data that they're going to be able to like say, all right, here, we'll give you a car if we can just, you know, take all the data we can from you while you're using your car, whether it be, you know, what you're buying, what your people are in the car doing. And interesting how the world is evolving and changing and becoming a data-driven world. Don't you think, Carl?
Well, they say data is the new oil.
Wow, you know? There you
so
go.
Just as that was a resource that powered and still powers a huge chunk of the world's economy, that's what they're saying about data, too, is that it's going to be the new oil, and that everyone's going to be chasing it because you can do so many things with it.
Well, we'll have John Ellis on from Ellis & Associates later on in the show to talk about that. Let me ask you about the Dodge Demon for a second. When you drove this car, did you get to drive it beyond the racetrack or on the street? What was it like?
Well, that's what's so fabulous is that, you know, it's got drag radials, so it really shouldn't be driven in any kind of water situation because there's no way for it to really deal with that. And it
right.
says right there, you have to sign a thing that's got like 10 stipulations you agree to when you buy the car. And among them is that you won't drive it in any kind of rain.
Right.
But it's still like every other Challenger. What surprises me, the Hellcat's another one with 707 horsepower. The Demon's got 840. But these are really functional cars beyond their crazy numbers. If you just get in one and decide to drive somewhere, it's not like, oh, God, it's so obvious this car really shouldn't be done. You know, nothing should be done with this car except crazy performance stuff. They don't feel like that at all. Even the Demon doesn't feel like that when you drive it around. It is a functional car. I would be seriously tempted to get a second set of wheels and tires for it from the wide-body Hellcat, which has the same basic wheel and tire size, but they have regular, you know, non-drag radials, so that you could drive it under any circumstances. And then just keep those drag radials around for the Demon when you want to go to the track. And I said that to Tim Kaniskas, who runs Dodge, and he's like, yeah, we've already got guys who are getting a Demon who are interested in that. So,
right.
And the tires and wheels from a wide-body Hellcat bolt right up and work.
Nice.
So it'd be very easy to just use the car as a daily driver that still does 9-second quarter miles.
Well, you know, my ACR has those same kind of tires where when I saw, I was driving back when I bought it from Texas, and I saw a big rainstorm And I thought, well, let's look at the map and see if we can go around this because I don't, you know, I got to keep moving. And fortunately, I looked and I could see on radar that the rain was going another direction. But yeah, you can't drive those cars on wet streets because the tires will just slip out from under you.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. What about the Durango SRT, which is, I believe, a car, if we don't talk about it, a vehicle, an SUV with a ton of horsepower, I believe it's going to get overlooked by many. And I think this is just hotter than hot.
It is. 475 horsepower, 470 pound-feet of torque. The most powerful, you know, SUV you can buy right now is like a family vehicle.
Until the Jeep comes out, the Jeep Trackhawk, right?
Yeah, that'll have the a Hellcat engine in it.
I love what these guys are doing at this group, though. You know,
FCA, they just definitely know they don't know when to say when.
Thankfully. They know, thank God.
But the SRT is another just fabulous execution of V8 power in a really otherwise capable frame. Don't forget, that's what makes the Challenger so good. That's what makes the Durango so good is these cars come with six cylinders. You can get both these models with six cylinders. And when you buy them with six cylinders, they still drive really well. The suspension and the chassis that's underneath these vehicles makes them extremely, you know, comfortable and confident and, you know, really more nimble than you'd think the vehicles that weigh as much as they do weigh. But they also can go really fast in a straight line and remain confident and comfortable if you put big engines in them. And Chrysler knows this, so that's what they do.
Hats off to the folks at FCA for you know, giving a tip of the hat to guys like Tim Kaniskis and Mike Manley from Jeep and those to be able to do what they're doing with these fun machines that I guarantee people are standing in line to buy. We're going to take a little break, come back, talk more with Carl Brower, who is a gearhead, and he's also an executive publisher. We're going to take a break. It is The Drive. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
What do you think the teacher's going to look like this?
It's time to streamline your tools with the Craftsman C3 19.2-volt cordless system. One C3 battery helps your tool work longer and powers over 30 different tools like the Craftsman C3 19.2-volt hammer drill. The compact hammer drill pushes out up to 515 inch-pounds of torque to handle even your toughest drilling and driving projects. A Jacobs metal ratchet and chuck and an LED work light makes this hammer drill durable and versatile. Craftsman, made to make. Available at Craftsman.com, Sears.com, Sears, Sears Hometown, and Sears Hardware Stores.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television, and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, if you are the kind of person that likes to tinker on your own cars, make sure you have a Haynes Automotive Repair Manual. You know, I mean, it's like the cars are too complicated these days to do it all from memory the way we used to. Haynes is the automotive information resource for the DIY enthusiast. And they're the worldwide leader of automotive and motorcycle repair information for over 50 years. HAYNES.com, and they also have them for your iPad or whatever, so you can watch videos and stuff, too. It's pretty cool. Haynes.com. Carl Brower is with us, executive publisher, AutotraderDealer.com, and KellyBlueBook.com. And we've been talking about the Dodge Demon, the Durango SRT, the new wide-body Hellcat. And then you also are driving a Challenger TA. Man, this is like hearkening back for you to your muscle car days. You know, hot
ride. It's dangerous, Alan. It is dangerous. I'm in that Challenger TA, and that was one of my favorite cars from the original muscle car era. And first, the fact that Dodge translates that 1970 style with the stripe down the side where it says TA and the blacked out hood, how well that translates to 2017 on the new Challenger.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Surprises even me. And all the Challengers look good that do throwbacks, but this thing just, it's everything I loved about the original in its looks. Of course, it's far superior to the original in every other way. And I've been driving it around for the past week, and I just am like, okay, I do not need more cars. I do not need to get it. My garage is already full. You're stop right. thinking about it.
And you got a big one coming, by the way.
So. Exactly. And I got other bills to pay coming in the future. So I really don't need another car like that. And yet, the TA is fabulous. It's a fabulous car. And you know, the one I've got right now, I think the sticker is right around a little over $40,000. What you're paying and what you're getting in that car in terms of acceleration and style and comfort, it's got a super track pack mode that you put it into. And despite, again, its relatively large dimensions and weight, it still feels pretty nimble. You put it in that mode, and all of a sudden the steering gets a little tighter and the suspension stiffens up, and it's like, okay, let's go around corners, which was the idea behind the original Challenger TA. That was supposed to be the handling-oriented Challenger in 1970.
Remind me what TA stands for.
Trans Am.
Okay,
so
that's
basically the closest thing you got to, you know, Pontiac made an entire franchise out of the Trans Am, as we know.
Right.
But Dodge did have their own Trans Am.
I was having a total brain fart. I was looking at that going, I was like, I can't remember what the hell TA stands for. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like, and here's the funny part. You know, the fact that Dodge with the Challenger has ignited a blowtorch of a flame inside gearhead guys, you know, guys like yourself that are executives at big companies and guys like me that are, you know, I mean, I can have kind of whatever car I want right now. And I'm looking at the demon going, all right, I think I got to have me that car.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what color would you get, by the way? If you could get a demon, there's 12 colors. What would you get? If you looked at the colors, they have a weird army green. They have black.
I saw the chart a couple weeks ago. I think you posted on Facebook.
Yeah, I did.
And then I couldn't find it just recently because I was looking. Because, you know, I'll be honest with you. I told Tim on the event. I said, Tim Kaniskas, who runs Dodge, I said, you know what? I have no financial responsibility at all to be spending money on a car like this. Is there still a way for me to get one of these things? And so he's looking into it for me because I'm the same way. I just, you know.
It's a blowtorch, man. You can't control it.
This is the 71 Hemi Cuda of 2017,
I totally agree.
It really is. And if you're a muscle car guy like you and I are, this is like our dream come true. This is nirvana for us having a car like this. So, but I would love to get, I mean, a plum crazy one. I would go totally crazy if I got a car like this. I'd make it nuts. So, although they do look good in red. The red with the black.
I
feel like it's a Dodge Demon. And that red demon-oriented color really matches the personality of the car well.
I think if a guy got a red one and he took and made everything red, including the wheels and everything, because there's going to be so many. I got to figure out how to be different. How do you be different?
Yeah.
There's only 12. I literally asked him. I said, if I buy one, would you do a one-off color for me? And as fast as I hit send, he hit nope. Right.
Yeah.
And he goes, at least I was fast on my answer. And I said, yeah, 2.3 seconds.
Yeah.
Because that's 0 to 60.
That's right. Fastest 0 to 60 car made right now. It's the most everything car. I mean, you know the deal, right? It pulls the most G's off the line, 1.8. 0 to 30 is 1 second. You know, quarter mile, 9.65 potentially and all. It's the only production car ever made with a trans brake, you know, which is a pure drag race piece of equipment to have on a vehicle. So it's just the mostest, the thisest, the firstest, the onlyest. It's all over the place.
I'm going to quote you on that. It is the mostest.
Yeah, it is. It's the mostest car that's really
awesome.
Ever been made.
Well, there you go. That's why people are paying, from what I understand, somebody has paid as much as $50,000 over window sticker to get one of the first ones. And I've heard rumor of as much as $80,000. Now, that's where a fool and his money are soon parted, I think.
Yeah.
Because like to pay double.
Doubling the price of the car.
Yeah,
I mean, they're $84,995. And truthfully, that's a hell of a deal. I think they could have priced the thing at $120,000 and they'd have still sold every one of them.
Yeah, so. Well, obviously that's what they're going to be selling for.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Well, you know what? Listen, I know there's so much going on. Maybe you can come back next week and talk to us about, I know the Tesla Model 3 launch, which just happened evidently last night. Were you there?
Yeah, and they're bad at inviting media, but apparently they did have an event last night, and there's some coverage of it out there. But, you know, critical car for them, critical car. Next 12 months, critical for Tesla.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Carl Brauer. Again, you can find him, his own website, too, Carl Brauer, BRAUER.com. Or, of course, if you want to know what your vehicle's worth, check out Kelley Blue Book, KBB.com, Dealer.com, for those of you who know what they have to do over there. And, of course, if you want to buy or sell anything, check out AutoTrader.com. I've been using that. I mean, I remember being the centerfold in AutoTrader. How do you like that?
Scary.
My cars were anyway. All right, Carl, thank you very much.
Take care. Please.
All right. It is The Drive. We're going to come back with some Brian Armstead. Now we're going to go tall, 6'9". And I mean, I'm 5 foot fat, so, you know, we'll talk on the other side. It is The Drive. Hey, it's Alan Taylor. Are you looking for an opportunity to buy a franchise, one that you can really wrap your arms around?
Crunch Fitness is really a great opportunity for you. Now, here's a fitness company that's about 10 bucks a month to join. So even if you just want to join, it's a great deal. You want to check it out because I have been personally watching this company grow like crazy. Visit them online at crunchfranchise.com and be in business for yourself, but not by yourself, and have fun doing it.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, I just got back from driving a new vehicle for Infiniti. It is the Q50. Now, Brian Armstead, my buddy, who's, again, 6'9", a very large man, he also drove the vehicle, and I thought we could take a few minutes to talk about some of the, you know, the differences between a 5-foot fat and a 6'9" guy. Because I'm just, you know, 5 foot fat. Anyway, contributing editor to Black Enterprise magazine, blackenterprise.com, also roadfly.com, and his Instagram handle is roadgearsun, at roadgearsun. 6'9", did you fit in there, Brian?
Yeah, I did. I fit very well. A lot of room in the car, would not want to be in the back seat behind me, of course, but... You know, it's a great three-seater with Brian Armstead behind the wheel.
Yeah, exactly. So, Infiniti...
It's a roomy sedan.
This is a Q50, and the one I drove had a big red S on it. Did you have an S also?
Yeah, that's the designation for Red Sport, and it's your 400 horsepower, 350 pound-feet of torque supercar. I mean, the thing just, as you know, Alan, it really goes like steak. It's a performer. Now, Infiniti has two other twin-turbo variants. They have a 300-horsepower twin-turbo, and then they have another twin-turbo. I forgot the two 3-liter V6s, one 300, one 400. The 400 is the Red Sport, and the 300 is the just the regular twin-turbo.
Right, and they make
a 208-horsepower four-cylinder.
I was going to say a four-cylinder also, and I did not drive four-cylinder because I'm a bit of a... You know, kind of a crazy. I like to feel the power. Feel the power. You know.
Now on my way, Alan, we only had access to the Red Sport cars.
Hmm.
So okay. Now they had a Red Sport with a custom tunable exhaust system. They had two of those, but we drove the Red Sport and we drove the Q60 Red Sport. So Q50 sedan, Q60 coupe, both. All the models available were Red Sports.
Hmm.
So I think they just wanted to put their best foot forward and gosh darn it, they did.
You know, Infiniti's a funny company. They are the quiet company. I guess I could say that. They just don't make a bunch of hoopla. Their commercials are...
I don't understand.
You know, well...
I don't understand it, man.
Well,
that's part of their history. I mean, you go back to 1990 when they had the stellar Q45. The thing had a raucous 4.5-liter V8. And then here comes Lexus with their pillow-soft LS400. And, you know, everybody saw pictures and images of the LS and the luxury that it provided because, you know, S-Class and 7 Series were the kings back then. And then here comes Infiniti showing fields of flowers and all this, you know, psychoanalytical, visceral BS. And you know, nobody bought the car. And they had active steering and four-wheel steering. I mean, they had all kinds of super high-tech on this Q45.
Well, wait a minute.
There's been a history of the brand.
It's bizarre, though. They won awards for those advertising campaigns, but it didn't sell enough cars. That's the problem with it.
Well, you know, winning awards and not selling, you know, hey, great if your ad company wins an award. I would have put them on I'd have hung them up to dry, man, for those silly commercials. You're dying to see the new car. Everybody's like, well, have you seen it? Have you seen it? No, but I know what, you know, some wildflowers out in, you know, Montana look like.
Well, and then even one of them was a paintbrush stroke. All they showed you was kind of like a, you know, and that was it. It was just a couple of strokes to show the kind of the line of the car.
The only person that can get away with a swoosh is Nike, and that was already taken. So, no swooshes on canvas, and forget about it.
That's funny. You know? Well, as far as...
this 2018 Q50, man, they've got, you know, several different models. They've got a 2.0T called the Pure. I love the nomenclature here. Bear with me for just a second. 34,200. Then you've got the 2.0T Lux, 36,550. You've got a hybrid Lux for 50,600. A 3.0T Lux for 38,950. A 3.0T Sport for $40,650, and then the King of the Hill Red Sport at $51,000. you know, aggressive styling on the red Sport, you know, more sporty styling, more aggressive air intakes up front, rifled exhaust on the rear diffuser, a lot of styling touches, you know, beautiful wheels, carbon fiber mirror caps. There's a lot that differentiates, you know, the base model Pure from the get the heck out of my way Sport. It's just really quite a package for $51,000.
You know, it's interesting how a lot of the car companies these days are offering cars that start, you know, like even with the take example for Dodge, since they sponsor the show, I know enough to be stupid. They start in the 20s, you know, like let's just say mid to high 20s for a Challenger. Or you can buy the Demon at 85. So you take that same, you know,
right? Try to buy a Demon. Try to buy a Demon for 85. You show me where you can get one. For
well, a window sticker. I know. I've heard. By the way, I've heard people are paying $50,000 over for a window sticker. It's like what? But you know. Yeah, anyway, the point that I was making is that even in this car with the Infiniti Q50S at 51, and that does not include destination charges, which is about another almost a grand, so 52, and it starts in the mid 30s. You know, you can take, you know, the basic car, which they're calling the Pure, and you can completely, you know, add all of the technology package and the horsepower package and all the stuff and get all the way over to, you know, $50,000. That's, you know, you're adding a whole nother car's value to the price of that car, which is interesting.
Well, take it even further, Alan, because my car had the sensory package, you know, where you can smell all the goodies in the car for $2,650. The proactive package is called the Get It Done package, $2,700. The illuminated kick plates, $465. The radiant grill, $400. And a spare tire package for $300 with destination, carbon fiber, $1,500. $59,920. So you've doubled almost the, the base 2.0.
Oh, my gosh. Sure. Right?
But you know what? You get what you pay for. I mean, you know, the packages have a lot of super duper technology in them. You know, if you want all the seat throbbing Bose 16 speakers, then you got to get the Sensory package. It's got a telescoping wheel column, tilt and telescoping memory seats, all kinds of goodies, advanced climate control, interior ambient lighting.
You know what, though, Brian? I was sitting
carefully, and you can. You can get a real good deal.
I was sitting in that car, and I know it has a very, very fancy Bose stereo system. I got to hand it to the engineers. You could close your eyes and crank that music up the way I did.
Oh, crazy.
And I didn't close my eyes while I was driving, but I mean, I was driving. I cranked up one, you know, a good song that I really liked. And if I would have closed my eyes, I would have thought I was in the concert. That's how good that music is. And
absolutely.
Interestingly
that's
enough,
clean, clean and pure.
Well, you're right. In they can actually aim the speakers at you. The car is like the perfect box to be able
soundstage.
To. You know, yeah, it's a soundstage, right?
If you have the right NVH characteristics in the car and the right acoustic damping, I mean, they've really nailed it. This thing sounds far superior than to the $6,300 buying an Olufsen system that they used to have in some Audi A8 models. Mm. I don't know what it costs now. I haven't been in the new A8 for a couple of years, but, you know, this thing really kicks some butt.
What is this?
The whole interior.
What is this comparable to, by the way? The 5 Series BMW and the C-Class or E-Class Mercedes? Is it like midsize?
Well, I don't know that it, you know, enthusiasts might not take it up that far. I would compare it to the BMW 4 Series in terms of cost and performance. The Mercedes-Benz C-Class in terms of cost and performance. The E-Class is it's a $75,000 car, you know.
Yeah, but also it starts in it'll start in the 50s. Interesting. So
yeah, but this car starts in the 30s, right. Which is more C-Class.
Yeah. Well, you know, price-wise, but that's why I'm wondering, because it seems like it's bigger than those cars you just described. Anyway,
I don't have a comparison of specs back to back, but you know that whole line of what market a car is in, it blurs sometimes. You know, I would think this car competes very nicely with the Alfa Giulia at $81,000. They both have 400 horsepower engines.
By the way, this is available in all-wheel drive too, isn't it?
I don't think the Red Sport is available in all-wheel drive, and if it is, it's not out yet.
Yeah, well,
I don't see any all-wheel drive models listed here on their pricing structure. So
yeah.
I'm sure it's coming, because the G37X, you know, if you recall, was an all-wheel drive model.
Right.
So a lot of stuff to be coming down the road. I'm sure all-wheel drive is in the works. Got to be.
All right, the Infiniti Q50S. which is the Red Sport, I guess is what they call it. Nice vehicle. Brian Armstead, thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Again, you can find him at roadfly.com or Black Enterprise Magazine. I'm Alan Taylor. This is The Drive. We'll be right back with more.
We go fishing or go sailing in the sea.
Maybe you're asking yourself, who is that guy in the mirror? What happened to the guy with the brass knuckle attitude? Maybe he just needs to decide, is that a tie around his neck or a leash? Join Brotherhood of Muscle with an available 485 horsepower Dodge Charger or Dodge Challenger GT. The world's first all-wheel drive two-door muscle car at the Dodge Drive and Discover event. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, we go from a 6'9" black man to a 6'5" or 6'7" big tall white man, John Ellis from Ellis & Associates. How tall are you, John?
6'6".
6'6". I'm just doing tall people today. It's the show is all tall.
Okay.
All tall all the time.
There you go.
Yeah, Brian Armstead, who was just on, 6'9", tests cars. You know?
Wow.
I told him, I said, we can test a car because you're 6'9" and I'm 5 foot fat. So we have those two different, it's like Laurel and Hardy, you know? So your whole job in life is keeping an eye on technology and what is going on there. And I heard some rumblings about Tesla, and I want you to pick it up from there. What was going on with Tesla and insurance, raising rates of people that own Tesla, something to that effect?
Yeah, in late May, early June, the AAA announced that it was going to be raising rates on Tesla car owners' insurance rates due to frequency of crashes, but more importantly, the cost to repair. They were finding that the cost to repair the Tesla was more exorbitant than they had originally calculated when they were trying to put their rate tables together.
Huh.
And when you talk to them about it, right, and you say, hey, what's going on? A lot of it is the technology that's in the car, the cost to calibrate, to replace. So you and I have had long conversations with collision repair guys. It's becoming a more and more of a concern as we have ADAS cars. Tesla's sort of at the peak of it. And so, yeah, so it was very interesting to see rates are going to go up. And they're going to try and figure out what's going to happen as they begin to assess, you know, all these cars that are on the road with all this advanced technology. What's it going to take to repair?
You know what? It used to be if you wanted to buy a Tesla and you had to ask how much it was, you couldn't afford it. But with the Model 3, that's supposed to be not true. It's supposed to be the new affordable Tesla. But this is a good warning, you know, shot across the bow for those who want to buy a new affordable Tesla. They will have higher insurance rates, according to AAA anyway. You know, it's interesting. My daughter hit a deer the other night, and she has a little Volkswagen Tiguan. And it's 2014 or something. She hit a deer. It's like, oh, poor deer. You know, kind of ripped the corner of the plastic bumper end off and kind of smashed the door in a little bit because the door, you know, the deer went down the side. Didn't pop the airbags. She didn't crash or anything. It was just, you know, a deer strike. And she continued driving home, which was about a half an hour. No lights, no bells, no whistles. And she took it in the next day. That was like on a Sunday. On a Monday, she took it into the insurance company. And it was like $10,000 damage, which comes very close to totaling the car. It's still drivable. It's still fine. And you know why? It's because of the cost of repair these days. They have to, you know, there was some wires, you know, I mean, because we're dealing literally with, you know, rolling computers. These cars are rolling computers. Yes. But there were some wires that were broken. They said, oh, well, the only way that can be repaired is to change the whole wiring harness on the front of the car, which all by itself is a ton of hours at $100 an hour, whatever the labor rate is. So, yes, insurance rates on these things are going to be the more technologically advanced the machine, the more it's going to cost to repair. But, wow, that's pretty wild. Huh.
Yeah, well, we're in a crossover period, right? Because, I mean, the promise of all this technology is to minimize accidents, right, is to avoid accidents. And so, but there's a period of time where we have other vehicles who do not have that technology. And so there's going to be this period where there's this massive sort of turbulence in the marketplace as we begin adding more and more tech to certain cars and then having to replace the car park over time. So it was a fascinating conversation because, you know, Tesla's, as you know, right, they're at the forefront of it, but there are many cars, the, you know, Ford, Chrysler, GM, they're all coming and they're all adding, you know, more and more of this technology to vehicles. So it'll be interesting to see what happens as the years come up. But yeah, that was an interesting note again in the last 30 days.
All right.
That I
so,
want to share with you.
Yes. Thank you for that. And for those people that are wanting to buy our own Teslas, there you go. Now, you know, Tesla, give me just a real simple thumbs up, thumbs down. Do you love the car? Do you not love the car?
I love the company. I love the car. And assuming that Elon can hit the Model 3, this insurance issue, I wouldn't take that any more than it is what it is. But I'd still buy a Model 3. If I were in the market to buy a car, I'd buy a Model 3.
There you go. He does drive a Toyota van. All right. And aren't you in it right now?
I'm in a Camry, but yes, I am in a Toyota. Yes, okay. I am in a Toyota.
We're going to come back and talk a little more with John Ellis, old friend, longtime friend, tall man, all tall today, Ellis & Associates. We're going to take a break. It is The Drive. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Haynes, the worldwide leader in vehicle repair information for over 50 years, is now available in electronic format with Haynes Manuals Online. You get all the trusted content of the Haynes printed manuals, but with added features including over 750 color photographs, color wiring diagrams, and videos to help you do the job right. They're formatted for all electronic devices, and over 180 car, truck, and motorcycle titles are now available. The new Haynes Manuals Online are now available at Haynes.com.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Our show brought to you in part by Bridgestone, and they're passionate about making tires you can count on to perform when it matters most. Bridgestone tires. I'm talking to my buddy John Ellis. Don't go looking for him. You cannot find him. He has no website, nor does he tweet. You can find him on LinkedIn. I guess that's about it. John Ellis, Ellis & Associates. He's just too busy for the rest of the world. That's all there is to it. During the commercial break there, we were talking and he starts telling me about this book that he's got coming out, which I am excited to let him tell you about because every now and then somebody writes something that we should actually read about what's going to happen in our future, what's coming down the pike. And John, I think your book, what is it called again?
The $0 Car.
Yeah.
How the Revolution in Big Data Will Change Your Life.
So explain what you just said, because, man, that just made my brain fry. I don't know why. Why would it change my life? Why do cars and data, why do they even go into the same conversation? You know me.
Yeah, so it's a hypothesis and premise I've put forth in a couple of different presentations, and it basically goes down the fact that as we add sensors to things, for example, a car, we generate lots of data, and there is going to be a time, which I think is here and now, where data being generated by the car is potentially more valuable than the car itself. And Google and Apple are, in fact, wanting to transact in that data. So the hypothesis of the world is, could we, in fact, find ourselves in a world where companies like Google and Apple will pay you for this data to the point that it offsets the purchase of the vehicle such that you get, quote-unquote, the $0 car.
Can you imagine that? I mean, do you really, really think that is in our future?
You know what? As I write about in the book, I mean, yes, it is. And Google and Apple are already doing that, right? They give you, quote unquote, free email, but it's not free. They transact your personal data. They give you free calendar. It's not free, right? We already have the model in terms of gross understanding. It has never been applied to the vehicle yet. Could you, Alan Taylor, do this in your car? Highly unlikely. However, part of the book's call to arms is to be aware of it and so that you understand so that when you go down the path of either purchasing a car or understanding what's going to be in the car, that you understand that value. And again, it's not limited to a car. We could imagine the world of a house with new sensors, right? Procter & Gamble, what would they pay to underwrite knowing what's going on in your car, on your house, right? Amazon, Google, others. So the book is a call to arms about what's happening in the world of data and what happens when an asset potentially generates data that is more valuable than the physical asset itself.
So why would they want to know about my foot fetish? That's what I want to know.
Well, they may want to know more about your foot fetish because they want to know about what's happening, with, to sell you different kinds of, shoes, right? Or night slippers or anything like that, right? So, I mean, a lot of companies at the end of the day are interested in knowing more so they can do something more about personalized experiences, personalized products, etc.
Cuticle trimmers and foot creams. I get it. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, all right. All of that.
It's all very helpful to me. Wow. I mean, the future is so bizarre. It's like to even think about stuff like this. It used to be, the things we worried about were, not nearly as lofty as this kind of stuff. And I don't know that it's something to worry about. It's kind of something to go, well, that kind of may be kind of cool for many. But what happens to the enthusiast, John? I know you're more of a software guy and I'm the geek car guy, but what happens to the guys like me? Is my Viper going to end up in some sort of a motorsports park and not even be allowed on the road?
I don't know that that's necessarily the future. Certainly, it's certainly the sensorization construct that I talk about when we talk about the $0 car. That's not this path. The path I think that you're more concerned with is why are we adding the sensors? And a lot of it's because of safety. And then as we get into the idea of doing more along the lines of autonomous driving, as we get down that path, could we see a world where cars that don't have the technology are sort of removed from the roadways? Possibly.
No.
Maybe. I don't know. I can't foresee the future that far. It's very possible that you might see something along that line. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, we better go out and have our fun now. John Ellis, the book will be called again. And when's it coming out? Give me all that.
October 20th, $0 car. The revolution of big data will change your life.
Wow. All right. Well, maybe we give away a copy or two on the show here and promote it when the time comes. This is going to be an interesting book. Can't wait to read it. My friend John Ellis, everybody, Ellis & Associates, and don't go looking for him. No website, does not tweet, does not care about that. Just sits there with his gigantic crystal ball foretelling the future. John, thank you.
Thank you.
He's a good guy. All right, we've got another hour to go right here on The Drive. And our show brought to you in part by GoRVing.com. It is the one site where you can find everything you need under the sun for your next RV adventure. I'm Alan Taylor. There's another hour. We'll be back. Where does the love for a car come from? If the car is a Subaru Legacy, the answer would be the symmetrical all-wheel drive. Power goes to all four wheels all the time for optimum grip. The Subaru Boxer engine's lower center of gravity makes the Subaru Legacy more responsive around corners and gets better fuel economy than front-wheel drive competitors. What you have then is a midsize sedan with grip, handling, and enviable fuel economy. It's no wonder it turns people into people who love cars. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto News, exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, last week, Ed Justice Jr., my buddy, and I talked about Monterey Car Week that is coming up in mid-August, and we wanted to give you guys a heads up of the amazing fun week that we have up on the Monterey Peninsula every year for Pebble Beach and the Quail and Gordon McCall's Motorworks Revival and all the fun stuff, the Monterey Historic Races. And afterwards, I realized that I had not talked to Gordon McCall about his event called Gordon McCall's Motorworks Revival in a long time, and it really is the kickoff of Monterey Car Week. I also had not been in a number of years, and I thought, well, maybe things have changed. It's the 26th annual. That means he's been doing it forever. So I thought, well, let's get Gordon McCall on and talk about it. Hi, Gordon. How you doing?
Hey, Alan. Good. Thank you for having me on.
Well, your event, by the way, to me, there needs to be a TV show or a TV series called Gordon McCall's Motorworks Revival, because you bring the best of the entire hobby together at the Monterey Jet Center. And I don't know anybody better to talk about it and describe what it is than you. And I want to know the genesis of it, too. So give us a couple of minutes on this event.
Sure, Alan. Well, you know, one of the things we're just super proud about is 26 years ago when we came up with this idea of mixing aviation and automotive interests together, little did we know that we were pioneering it. It really hadn't been done before. You know, there were no such things as kickoff parties in airplane hangars prior to major concourse.
Right.
So it was a new, innovative idea, and with great flattery, we've been knocked off across the country. I don't think there's a major car event now that doesn't host a hangar party prior to it.
Right.
And we get great letters in the mail from various folks saying, hey, just want to let you know, we're knocking you off. Well,
yeah.
You know, the thing that we're really proud about, Alan, is that we are kind of the benchmark for that ensemble. You know, Monterey is viewed as one of the most important car weeks internationally. During the Pebble Beach Concours, the Quail, Concorso Italiano, you know, there's just so much going on during that week, the races at Laguna. And to be measured, you know, is kind of the high water mark of all. Yeah, we love that. And it also encourages us to strive to be relevant every year. You know, like you said, 26 years, you know, 26 years of doing anything is a long time. So we're actually looking at this year as year one with a complete fresh set of eyes and just going right at it with full enthusiasm. So it started with I kind of sensed a bit of a void. At the time, I was in the restoration business, had been for years. Our clients were flying in from all over the place, and I thought, where's the party in town that kind of gets everybody together before everything?
Right.
Because, you know, we had people hanging out in our shop, which was adjacent to an airport hangar, you know, and I thought, well, let's just have a party. So I wanted to pick a night that wasn't being used at all. I didn't want to compete with anybody. You know, it wasn't a commercial enterprise. It was just a party. So we chose the Wednesday of Car Week, which 26 years ago was a pretty quiet time of the week. You know,
right.
Not everybody was here yet, with the exception of everybody that really mattered was here, you know. So
right.
Particularly the European contingency. You know, they all come out for the month. You know, they send the plane, they send the cars, the chef, they run a house. And they're entrenched for a month on this beautiful peninsula.
I love how you said that, too, by the way. They send the cars, the chef. That's so great.
Just the fact here, Alan. So, you know, it is amazing. And, you know, so what started off as a relatively small, intimate little get-together with clients and friends started with about 50 people, a few cars, a couple airplanes. You know, over the years, that really started evolving. And 1997 was a real pivotal year for us. I managed to get a hold of a friend who works for Gulfstream. I'd heard about this crazy new plane they were working on, the G5, and had heard rumor that there was an operational G5 in the fleet that they could, you know, maybe send out to the West Coast. Well, come to find out, Gulfstream was looking to get the attention of two of my clients that they could not get a hold of, and thought if they sent the plane to the party, they're kind of killing two birds.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, and so, and I also called some buddies over at the Naval Air Station at Lemoore, California, and asked if they could bring an F-18 over, just for fun. And, I mean, this is back in '97. It was kind of a different world back then.
I know. So, I was there. I was there. But I wasn't.
Know.
I wasn't at your party. I don't think in '97, but I think I might have come in '98. Believe it or not.
So you remember those early years.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll just never forget. So here's the Gulfstream, the new G5, which was pretty legendary in its day, still is. It was not outfitted in the interior. It was still green on the inside, but it was all painted up. And Gulfstream ended up selling two planes that night.
Oh, my gosh.
So it kind of took off from there. You know, then other airplane companies wanted to be a part of it. And then we mixed in, you know, vintage air warbirds and old cars, new cars. It just turned into this thing.
Amazing. All right, hang tight.
Yep.
We're talking with Gordon McCall. He has Gordon McCall's Motorworks Revival. It is the kickoff party to the Monterey Car Week. And, man, I might have to change my plans and go in a little early this year. And it's something that I haven't done in a few years. But I think for the what he called the first, since it's the 26th, he's got to have something special in mind. And I'm going to find out on the other side of this break. You're listening to The Drive. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet. The new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance.
You're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Thanks for joining us. Our show brought to you in part by Brembo, Choice of Champions. I'm talking with my friend Gordon McCall. Man, I think we're turning silver together, Gordon. 26th annual Gordon McCall's Motorworks Revival. And you're saying, so it's the 26th year, but you're looking at it like the first year. So is something new in store?
You know, new in that fresh scenery, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
You know, we host this affair with our wonderful partners at the Monterey Jet Center, which is a private FBO at the Monterey Airport. And, you know, we always have wonderful airplanes on display. This year, it's going to be a little over the top. We've got a gentleman named Richard Martin, wonderful, wonderful guy, has been restoring a C-41, which is the military version of the DC-3, which is arguably one of the most iconic silhouettes. You know, everybody in the world knows what a DC-3 looks like, even if you know nothing about airplanes, right? It's so reminiscent of that era. Well, this polished C-41 will be coming in, and it's a plane that was used by a general in the Army as his personal transport. So it was always outfitted kind of luxuriously. It was
Wow.
kind of the Gulfstream 5 of its day.
Right.
So it's coming. I've got three P-51 Mustangs, which is, you know, to see one is kind of exciting. To see three together
right.
is pretty cool and over the top. And then just a mix of a combination, everything from, you know, vintage open-wheeled racers, privately owned, you know, Maserati single-seaters, et cetera, right on up to the latest super and hypercars.
That is awesome.
And just kind of everything under the sun, Alan. So in terms of what's exciting and new, it's like new fun things to see, great food, great wine. That's a huge component of our event now. It's become a culinary affair.
Yeah.
And so we're pretty jazzed about it.
All right. So people, if you want to find out more, check out McCallEvents.com. That's M-C-C-A-L-L, events.com. Real quickly also, you are one of the co-founders of The Quail, a motorsports gathering, which is another amazing event. Give me 2 minutes on that.
You know, that's another thing. You know, we talk about doing the stuff that we love to do. Alan, I think you're getting away with that handsomely.
Yep.
And I feel like I'm in the same boat, because to sit down with my dear friend Sir Michael Kuduri, who's chairman of the Hong Kong Shanghai Hotel Group, which is the parent company for the Peninsula Hotels, and of course they own Quail Lodge and Golf Club in Carmel Valley, to sit down with him and come up with a fresh idea for an event there, which now is 15 years old, was really exciting. And you know, we've come up with this all-inclusive, everybody's a VIP, which is very, very Peninsula Hotel-like. You know, they are in the service business, and they look after their guests.
Oh, yeah.
Understatement, right? So it's interesting. Here we are 15 years later with this all-inclusive ticket. In other words, you eat your way through the day with five-star dining. you know,
true story, too.
It really is. It's literally like, you know, when you went to a five-star restaurant and a car show broke out.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's that type of deal. Yeah. And it's here it is 15 years later. No one else is doing this, Alan. I mean, that goes to show you how difficult. In the office that's dedicated to this, the Peninsula Signature Events Department at Quail Lodge, they work on this year-round.
Wow.
It is really an amazing effort that they do to pull off what is arguably one of the finest car shows. But what makes it unique during Car Week is that the judging is all done by the entrants.
Mm.
And this comes out of total respect for what the Pebble Beach Concours is. I was involved with that show for 28 years, and I certainly didn't want to move on with any kind of a, you know, string attached or
right.
feeling. I just felt like there was a time for me to do something different.
You know what? I love that, man. I love that because there's something so authentic and pure and innocent about just wanting to have another great gathering. And, of course, that's what you called it, a motorsports gathering.
Exactly.
And it's not one to get in the way of the Pebble Beach event. Again, you said it. You've been involved with it. You know how important that is to the hobby and the world that it is. But your event, with the Quail people, has become one that is equally as important to those in the hobby and unbelievably amazing. Again, everybody, it is called The Quail, a motorsports gathering. And is that, can they find out about that at McCall Events also?
No, actually just quaillodge.com.
Okay.
And there's a button you can click onto there for special events.
Beautiful.
Events. Yep.
I am running out of time, but I'm going to see you in no time because I think I have to change my, my schedule. Gordon McCall's Motorsports Revival. I hate to not invite anybody because I have to imagine you're probably sold out already.
No, we've got room for you and
okay.
others.
Okay,
yep,
well,
always.
McCallEvents.com if you have the hankering. Gordon McCall, you're the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
See you in just a few weeks.
Thank you.
We'll take a break, and there's more amazing stuff in this car hobby that we'll tell you about right here on this show. It is The Drive.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Hey, it's Alan Taylor here. I want to tell you about a brand new video series I'm co-hosting with my buddy Scott Duffy. It's called Business and Burgers, presented by Microsoft. The show travels across the United States, and we're in search of the best burger in America and a side of great business advice, too. Business, sports, celebrities, and food collide in an interview-style format with noteworthy entrepreneur guests sharing the secret sauce that it took to build prosperous, game-changing companies. Follow us online on YouTube, social media, and at businessandburgers.com. Go check out our new video. It's up right now.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, our show is brought to you in part by Dodge, domestic, not domesticated. So we go from Pebble Beach and the wine and cheese crowd back to the Dodge Demon for a second. I'm stuck on it. It's in my head. For those who missed the first hour, we talked about the Demon and all the different high-performance machines coming out of Dodge lately. And I did not go to drive it. There are many awesome journalists that did. Another awesome journalist, Stephen Cole Smith, Racer.com, Racer Magazine, and also went and drove the Demon. I said to him in the commercial break, I go, so how'd you like it? He goes, oh, I loved it. What's not to love, right, Steve?
And it really is. The little things that you discover on a car or truck after you buy them are, the manufacturers like to call them Easter eggs, the things that, you know, you're going along and you find out that, oh, that's got a, you know, a special backing on the floor mat that I didn't know was there. You know, little things that you just tend to stumble across.
Right.
And there are so many of those Easter eggs on the Demon, Alan. You're going to love that car. Most of them electronic, you know, things like when we drove them at Indianapolis Motor Speedway at IRP, they refused to let us see what we were running in the quarter mile. but all you do is flip a couple of pages and you get an instant readout from the instrument display.
Oh, so the sign that you, because you're running down the quarter mile drag strip, and they didn't let you see what your time was, but your car will tell you.
You know, they didn't want us actually racing, so they didn't give us a time slip, which would have been a great thing to have.
Yeah.
You know, but
memorabilia.
I figured out that, you know, hey, this you can tell not only the quarter mile, but, you know, the 0 to 60, the 0 to 100 feet, the 0 to an eighth of a mile,
wow. And
the 0 to a quarter mile. So, you know, you don't have to even do anything. It does it automatically. So as you're heading back down the return road, you just flip a couple of pages, and there's your quarter mile time.
So if I get the permission from the wife to buy this thing, of which, you know, I mean, it's something that, you know, I've been married 32 years. That is the first part of the application.
Right? If you want to be married 33 years, yeah, probably.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I was to get one, they do offer a sunroof. But when I think of what this purpose-built car is all about, a sunroof doesn't really fit into that equation. And I hear they're like $5,000 or something.
That's what they were telling us. They really don't want to build sunroofs in these, and they priced it to the point where nobody would want it, which makes that many more people want it. So apparently the take rate from buyers so far on the sunroof is tremendously high, and they're thinking, geez, we should have charged $10,000 for a sunroof. Not, I have no idea why you would want a sunroof in a dedicated drag racing vehicle, because
right.
I can promise you, you're too busy to actually look out the sunroof and enjoy the view while you're going down the quarter mile. I have a feeling maybe it's dealer driven, where they're making buyers check every possible option box if you want to get this thing. Because, you know, as you know, with like the Ford Raptor and a few other vehicles, they're getting, you know, five figures over list price for
right.
them. So, you know, if you want the permission to buy it, not only from your wife, but from the dealer, they may just hand you a form that has every option box checked.
Huh.
And you just sign your name on it.
That would
be my wild guess, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think from what I understand, hearing the scuttlebutt from, you know, the president and CEO of Dodge, that if there's a markup, you know, above the manufacturer representative price or whatever it's called, MSRP, whatever the hell that stands for anymore, they will not put that in the first build of the cars. In other words, it goes to the back of the line if the dealer's
right.
making too much. So I think that's an interesting, you know, way of dealing with it.
Yeah, I can't get too mad at dealers, because how long have we expected dealers to sell us stuff at under sticker price, which
yeah.
is pretty much forever. So if they end up with something they can sell for over sticker price, you know, it's... You know, I've had it explained to me that each dealer is an independent business, and they buy the car from the manufacturer, and they can turn around and sell it for as much or as little as they want to. And when they were stuck with a bunch of Dodge Darts, I don't think they were able to mark those up any over list price. So if Dodge dealers, you know, are marking up the Demon, that's, you know, their business, and that's between people that have a lot more money than I do, and people that don't, you know, there are some ridiculous vehicles that are getting marked up that you'll never get your money back out of. But to me, it's kind of sad that so many of these cars are destined to be parked in a closet somewhere or back of a garage and then pulled out in 10 years for the next Barrett Jackson auction in hopes of having a 5-mile Demon and hoping to sell it for, you know, $200,000, because I'd really love to see some of these things on the track.
You know what?
It's a masterpiece of engineering for the drag strip.
I agree with you, and I also disagree with you, only because I like to see them out, you know, in the wild and on the racetracks, but it's also fun when somebody does stuff one in the back of the shop and cover it up and, you know, forget about it for a decade and then pull it out and there's a time capsule of a car, you know. So it takes all kinds with this type of a thing. But all right, well, let me take a little break, come back, and we'll talk more with Stephen Cole Smith. You can find him at racer.com, along with a lot of other great magazines he writes for. I am on the quest to get a Dodge Demon. The question is, will Mama let me do it? I'm Alan Taylor. This is The Drive. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Let's say you want to make a DIY repair on your vehicle. Where do you go? Where do you turn for advice? Alan Taylor here. If you're considering free online repair advice, you might want to consider the source. Instead of putting your vehicle at risk, rely on accurate, complete guidance from start to finish with the experts at Haynes. Every Haynes manual is based on a complete teardown and rebuild of the vehicle. They learn the best ways to do the job and make it easier and cheaper for you. Available at most auto part retailers or at Haynes.com.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, our show is brought to you in part by Subaru. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Some wonderful cars for you folks out there. There are no bad cars being sold in the U.S. of A. That's just a given. So no matter what you get, it's going to be a good machine. The warranties are amazing. The fuel economy and most everything is pretty darn good. Even vehicles like, you know, the Dodge Demon we were just talking about, 22 miles to the gallon with 840 horsepower, even the Hellcat, you know, I drove the living hell out of it. The worst I could do was get 17 miles to the gallon. The worst I could do, and the average miles per gallon on about a 300-mile trip was 20 miles to the gallon combined. So we're talking, you know, this is like 707 horsepower. It's insanity to get that kind of fuel economy. And the Raptor, I drove the Raptor recently, which is kind of the I don't know what they call it, the truck equivalent, you know, although with a V6 twin turbo, it's amazing what that thing can do. And I know Stephen Cole Smith on the line, Racer Magazine, you did something here recently that involved a Raptor, did you not?
Yeah, it was one of those trips you really look forward to. One of the PR guys at Ford, Scott Sebastian, I started talking about this at Daytona back in January, and it actually came true. You know, the NASCAR Truck Series runs one dirt race a year at Eldora Speedway, which is the half-mile dirt track owned by Tony Stewart, the NASCAR guy. And they've been doing this. This was the fifth one, and I went to the first one. Haven't been to one since. But it's really amazing to see all these NASCAR guys driving on dirt in these trucks. They have a huge crowd. They have it on a Wednesday night. And the trip Ford had in mind is get just, you know, four or five of us, fly us into Dayton or someplace like that, and pick up a Raptor, drive it to the track, which is in western Ohio, in the middle of nowhere, kind of close to the Indiana border.
Right.
Watch the race, and then come back the next morning and get with Tony Stewart, who was hanging around, and none of us even knew that, but Eldora is right by a river, and there's a big quarry behind the track that he also owns, and they made a heck of a nice off-road course back there. And then, so we drove in the morning. We went back there with Tony, who is not a professional off-roader by any means, but he adapted pretty quickly. And the Raptor is amazing. I had not driven it, you know, 10 tenths off-road like that before. Dave Parachek, their head of performance, was with us. And basically, it was just one of those times that you think this is a pretty good job to have, you know,
right,
being an automotive journalist.
Yeah.
And then a little bit later, we had a barbecue lunch, and then Tony took us out on the oval track in the Raptor. And it's amazing what a guy who's that good on a dirt track can do with a stock truck. He would have qualified for the NASCAR race in that stock pickup truck,
four-door
pickup, because he was driving the one that I had driven there.
Right.
And I was afraid there'd be nothing left by the time it was ready for me to go back to the airport. But
it's funny to think,
Tony,
though, that you're calling that thing a stock truck, and it is a stock OEM, buy it from the dealer truck. But, man, there's nothing stock about it. That's what's so cool about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing. I had done a couple of days at Michelin earlier in the week, and they have, I think, B.F. Goodrich tires on there. And that was one of my favorite things about the Raptor is those guys had done such a great job with the tires that they're maybe the best on- and off-road tire and the quietest off-road tire I've ever seen. But I had no idea they would handle a dry dirt track the way they did with Tony, just throwing that thing sideways and going way down low under the corner, and then, you know, coming back up against the wall and throwing it back down. It was some of the most fun I've had in a long time. And anybody that thinks a Raptor is a pretty capable truck should have seen what this truck did. I'm going to write about it for the truck issue in Auto Week, and it was. Give me the Demon and a Raptor and maybe a Honda Accord, and I'll be happy the rest of my life.
A Demon, a Raptor, and a Honda Accord.
Well, something for my wife to drive.
Right.
I don't really want her in either one of those other two.
Right.
But those two, I think, I could happily drive. You know, I know Demon is a drag strip thing. I know it's got
Nitto
drag radials on all four wheels, but I would drive that car every day for the rest of my life.
By the way,
I would put 100 octane gasoline in it. There's a station just up the road, so I could get all 840 horsepower, and I would just poke along on that thing, knowing what it could do, and just smiling ear to ear.
You know, and you just described why they will sell all those sunroofs for $5,000 a pop in those Demons, because people are going to drive them every day. Here's the question, though. You said it about those Nitto slick tires for the racetrack. Not supposed to drive in the rain.
Those are pretty amazing tires. We drove it, you know, with the narrow tires on the front, the little 4-inchers from M&H. M&H and Goodyear make them. That's what we drove on the drag strip. But they put the four Nitto radials the same size in all four corners. You're going to have to buy those tires from Chrysler. Nitto is really the only one that makes them that size. But on dry pavement, they work pretty well. And from talking to some of the guys, they really are not terrible in the rain. Of course, there's no tire in the rain that's going to handle 840 horsepower, so you got to be pretty careful.
Right.
But they said it's not, you know, it's not dangerous dirt driving it normally with those drag radials. They do have a fair amount of tread on them. At least, I think the rear tires are good for at least 100 passes down the strip, and they love a burnout. They love a really hot burnout and then launch right away, because if you wait 15 seconds, you're losing a lot of traction on it.
Back to the Raptor for a second.
Yeah.
What was the one thing that percolates up that makes you go, you know, this is what surprised me? Is there one thing that surprised you about the Raptor from Ford?
Yeah, what a good, quiet, daily driver it is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had to drive it. I had to drive it back from Eldora to the hotel, which was over an hour, and it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and we're exhausted. And you think something that fast and that powerful off-road is probably going to be pretty miserable on the pavement. But, man, there's just, you know, with that 10-speed transmission, mileage is decent. The engine power band is right there. The seats are comfortable. Like I said, the tires are super quiet. You know, it's amazing what it can do off-road and when you press the pedal to the floor. But to me, the amazing part is just how docile that truck is as a daily driver.
I agree 100%. I, too, did a test of sorts with the Ford Raptor right on the Mexican border on the U.S. side. And we went to this place where Ford does some, I don't know, private testing, you might say. And they had these long spaces to where you could drive, you know, 100 miles an hour through the desert. And then
right.
They'd have little jumps set up. It's like the guy goes, okay, well, we're going to go by this way, and I'm going to point out the jumps, and then we'll go back. And then on the way back, I want you to, you know, catch some air. And I'm like, cool, look at this. So I'm going 70, then 80, then 90, then 100. I'm like, oh, my God, going 100 through the desert, you know, on a dirt road, smooth and comfortable. And I'm thinking to myself, this is too easy. And then he goes, yeah. All right. He goes, well, if you kind of pull off to the side here, you're going to catch that jump and we'll catch some air. So I started slowing. He goes, you don't have to slow down. So, dude, I went over those jumps 100 miles an hour, flew through the air probably 50 feet, landed just like I was in a, you know, a Class 1 Unlimited buggy from Baja.
Sure.
Amazing. And then we got back out to the street, you know, an hour or so later after jumping all over the desert. But I got air 7 times, and we put it back in street mode, and it was like driving a doggone Cadillac. Well,
yeah.
How's this? A
Lincoln. I mean, we beat the hell out of these trucks, and the only thing that went wrong is one of them did a jump, and then as you moved forward, it had a terrible grinding sound. But I think Parachick hopped in, backed it up. Apparently it was a rock that had gotten between the brake rotor and the caliper, and that was it. I mean, it was fine after that.
Love
it. I mean, there was nothing, not a scratch on them. I mean, it just, no bent wheels, nothing. You know, the thing is just so durable and so much fun. And, again, we're talking major markups. I had one over the Sebring 12-hour weekend, and a guy came up to me and said, how'd you get that? And I said, well, you know, it's a test drive. And he said, well, he pointed to a Ford dealer across the street and said, they've got one over there. I tried to buy it, but they wanted $35,000 over the list price.
Oh.
So I'm thinking, you know, I told him, I said, well, you might want to wait a year or two. I don't think
exactly.
These are going to be that limited edition. But that's what kind of appeal these trucks have right now.
All right, hang tight. We're going to take some more time with Stephen Cole Smith from Racer.com. My friend, my pal, my buddy, my hot rod loving, a muscle car eating, truck driving animal. We'll be right back. It is The Drive.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Maybe you're asking yourself, who is that guy in the mirror? What happened to the guy with the brass knuckle attitude? Maybe he just needs to decide, is that a tie around his neck or a leash? Join the Brotherhood of Muscle with an available 485 horsepower Dodge Charger or Dodge Challenger GT, the world's first all-wheel drive two-door muscle car at the Dodge Drive and Discover event. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Well, you're listening. listening to The Drive. Our show is brought to you in part by GoRVing.com. GoRVing.com, the one site where you can find everything under the sun for your next RV adventure. GoRVing.com. Thanks for the sponsorship. Stephen Cole Smith is here. He is with, amongst other companies, Racer.com. And, man, I don't know what it is about trucks. I have a number of trucks. I happen to be a muscle car guy, a sports car guy, and a truck guy. And I love SUVs. So I don't know that I fit into any particular genre because I have a Viper, so I want to take it to the track. I have, you know, my 79 Chevy short wide pickup with a factory 454 in it, and it's a classic truck. And I love that. I have Suburbans. I have such a bizarre collection of vehicles. But anyway, you talked about this Michelin, was it the design challenge? What were you doing with Michelin?
Yeah, it's a thing they do every year where they just basically throw out an idea. Last year it was design a Le Mans car for, I think, 2050. And some of them were amazing. I mean, some were so far afield. One of them was basically a ball bearing that a guy would sit on top of and drive around in. I mean, some were just so bizarre. Another one had LED lights covering the entire surface of the car, and they could show different advertisers where the car was in, you know, first, second, or third. Really neat ideas. This year, it's trucks, some kind of pickup truck. And they won't announce this until October, but I was there for the judging at their headquarters in South Carolina not long ago. And we may have seen the future of the pickup truck. There were, I think, something like 1,200 entries from all over the world. I mean, some of the winners last year came from South Korea, Turkey, all over the place. And it was really interesting to see the you and I have a concept of a pickup truck because we've been around them all our lives. But some of these young designers, you know, maybe have never seen one in person. You know, pickup trucks aren't everywhere in the world right now.
Right.
And their concept of trucks that probably would work in their country are very different than trucks that would work maybe here or in Australia or South America. So it was really a kick to see so many different entries, so many different great ideas. And then they had judges like Freeman Thomas, the design director of Ford. Oh. Rob McCachran, the off-road racer, was there sort of as a guest judge, and a lot of other designers from all over the world, having to narrow it down basically to a top three. And I can't say who won, but I was absolutely it was just about unanimous for the winner.
Really?
Which is a very, very cool idea, a very versatile pickup truck. That's something we actually could see, you know, in the next 10 or 15 years. But like I said, that'll be out on the truck issue for Auto Week coming up. I think it's an October cover date. It'll probably be out sometime in September. But there's going to be some really interesting trucks on the road if these young designers have anything to do with it.
You know, it's funny to think, you know, what can you do to a truck? It's, you know, it's kind of like a car with a bed on the back, you know, or the ability to carry cargo. But
right.
You look at the new Mercedes truck and, you know, how Honda kind of tried to redesign the truck a little bit, make it more like car friendly. Car owner friendly. So I can only imagine what that'll look like. We'll take one more break. I want to talk to you a little bit about Formula E and racing and get back to your racing roots with your Racer magazine and racer.com. We're talking with Stephen Cole Smith. This is The Drive. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
If the measure of a car was how many people it turned into people who love cars, the Subaru Outback would be worth its weight in gold, thanks largely to its symmetrical all-wheel drive. Unlike other systems that wait for a wheel to slip, it powers all four wheels all the time, all while with better fuel economy than midsize SUVs. And the fact that the Outback is made in a zero landfill plant doesn't hurt either. It's a car that is truly built to be loved. Love! It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Well, it's interesting, you know, with summertime here, it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And man, have you ever spilt chocolate milk in your vehicle? OMG. With that hot sun and whatever is in chocolate milk, oh my God, it smelled like there was a cadaver rotting in my truck after somebody spilled some chocolate milk. I don't know
you
what to do.
You still drink chocolate milk?
No, it was in the back seat.
From a sippy cup or what?
Yeah. One of the kids, my adult kids, somebody had chocolate milk and it spilled over. Oh, God. I don't know what to do about that, but I'll let you know how to get rid of the smell of a rotting cadaver. Anyway, speaking of that, Stephen Cole Smith is here. That has nothing to do with rotting cadaver smell. Racer.com. Formula E. Talk about Formula E a little bit.
Well, as you know, it's the all-electric series. It oversimplifies it to say it's Formula One with electric motors because it's not. The cars are completely different. The cars are all identical right now. That'll change eventually. But it's from the same – the people that brought you Formula One, the FIA and the ACO and those guys from Europe – thought that a Formula E electric series would be a good idea. So they started one in 2014. I think the first race in the U.S. was in 2015. They have a weird season that actually starts late in the year and goes – well, actually, this weekend is the last race of this season, but it picks up again before the end of 2017 and goes into 2018. It's in Montreal this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And that's it for this season. And then they pick up with European races. They race all over the place. But they had the first race in New York City a couple weeks ago. And I went to it, and it was pretty interesting. I went with Jaguar. And it's, the fact that they managed to pull off a race in New York was amazing. It was at the New York Red Hook Terminal for cruise ships, and there were no cruise ships anywhere, so they repaved part of the little parking lot they had there and made a little 1.5-mile track and squeezed in two grandstands and turned the terminal, which is kind of a big warehouse, into suites and the Emotion Club, E like electric, M for motion, get it, it's like an electric thing. And they put on a race, and what they got was exactly what they wanted, which was cars on the track and then cameras that were able to pan from the track up to the Statue of Liberty and the Manhattan skyline. Maybe not that many people showed up, a maximum of 40,000 over the 2 days. I don't think it was close to that many, but, a lot more would have shown up for Formula One. But right now, what Bernie Ecclestone calls the studio audience is the people that actually come to the race. It's the people that watch it at home and the manufacturers. And, man, Formula E is going nuts with manufacturers. Just this week, Mercedes is dropping DTM, which is their sedan series in Europe, and they're joining Formula E. As I mentioned, Jaguar, BMW, Renault, Audi, Porsche, the last time I talked to them, they were very interested in it. Mahindra, you've got basically two or three manufacturers, and then we got two in IndyCar, you got two or three in Formula One, but man, you've already got, six automotive manufacturers in Formula E. So it's a growing series. Now, is it good racing? Nah, not really. But it's a spectacle, and it was interesting seeing anything in New York with wheels and a bunch of enthusiastic people around it.
Bizarre in New York, and you just named off, Jaguar and Mercedes, and I don't know, man. I don't know what the future holds for our motorsporting world. It's very interesting how things are shifting to that electric.
Well, even more troubling, Alan. The thing they had as kind of a warm-up act was an autonomous race car that a guy drove around for a while and then got out, and then it drove itself around.
Oh, so, I've heard about that.
Yeah, so we're at a point where I think you can have celebrities like Richard Branson and Leonardo DiCaprio, who showed up here, and Catherine Zeta-Jones. They could actually sit at a panel, turn the on and off switch for the autonomous, and then act like they're racing the car. We don't even need people in the cars.
Right.
We could actually have celebrities racing the cars, which all they would do is just turn them on and off.
Right.
But they would be, the camera on Catherine Zeta-Jones, panning over Leonardo DiCaprio.
Shoot me in the head now, Steve, now.
What excitement.
Racer.com, that's where you can find Stephen Cole Smith. Auto Week, the story on the Michelin Design Challenge coming out soon. And, of course, every so often we get to have him grace the airwaves with us here on The Drive. Thank you very much, Steve.
Always a pleasure, buddy.
All right. You have a great rest of your weekend. And you folks, too, at home. I'm Alan Taylor. Thanks for listening. See you next week right here. Same time, same channel for more of The Drive. Have you ever tried to plan a vacation and the hotel costs, airfare, and pet sitter all add up to one big never mind? Well, it's time to embrace the adventure and go RVing instead. GoRVing.com is your one-stop shop for all things RV camping. Browse the different types of RVs, find a rental agent or dealer near you, and compare the costs. Explore more than 16,000 RV parks and campgrounds nationwide, and even plan your menus for the trip. Find out what you've been missing at GoRVing.com. That's GoRVing.com.